time for our regular chat with the BBC, and the BBC's Jonathan Frewen joins us now with the latest news from around the world. Good morning, your time, Jonathan.
Yes, hi there, Todd.
I guess Prince Harry dominates things as well, doesn't it? I don't know whether you even want to mention that.
Well, it's sort of a bit of focus. Yeah, first time in 120-odd years that a senior royal has been in the dock, and he's giving evidence for the next day or so.
Mm. Yep, that'll be interesting. Also, something else, roughly the same area. Hearings are taking place today at the International Court of Justice over the downing of Malaysian Airlines flight MH17 back in 2014 over eastern Ukraine. Tell us more about that.
Well, as you say, this dates back to 2014 when a Malaysian Airlines plane took off from Amsterdam, headed to Kuala Lumpur, was shot down by Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine en route, leading to the deaths of all 298 passengers and crew on board. Those on the flight were from 17 different countries, including almost 200 from the Netherlands, 43 from Malaysia, 38 from Australia and 10 from the UK. They packed for dream holidays and AIDS conference, family reunions and more. This week, judges are hearing Ukraine's claim that Moscow violated a United Nations treaty by supporting those separatists who have been identified by a Dutch court as being responsible for the downing of the plane. The International Court of Justice has set 4 days of hearings on several days this month to hear both sides in the matter. In this case, which was filed in 2017, is one of two that Ukraine has brought against Russia at the court. The other one, filed just after the 2022 Russian invasion, centres on Moscow's claim that they invaded Ukraine to prevent genocide. It generally takes several years for a case at the ICJ to reach the stage of hearings on the merits of the case.
As you say, this isn't the first time this matter's reached a court.
No, that's right. Back in November last year, a Dutch court found three men guilty of murder in this matter. The court found a Russian-made missile supplied from Russia and fired by an armed group under Russian control brought down the plane. Two Russians and one Ukrainian were found guilty in absentia and sentenced to life in jail. A third Russian was acquitted. At the time, the judges ruled that it was a deliberate action to bring down a plane, even though the three found guilty had intended to shoot down a military rather than a civilian aircraft. Russia always denied any involvement and instead pumped out a range of alternative theories, suggesting a Ukrainian fighter jet fired the missile or the Ukrainian government forces was responsible, and in some cases fabricated evidence to support their claims. These have in turn been diligently debunked with material gathered by a team of international investigators, and they were rejected by the Dutch court. The team found the disintegration of the plane was caused by the detonation of a Russian-made warhead carried on a missile launched from eastern Ukraine using a Buk missile system. But many of the victims' relatives believe if the world had reacted differently and taken a tougher stance against Russia back in 2014, the invasion of Ukraine and the geopolitical instability that followed could have been avoided. And this all comes as there seems to be an intensification of fighting in Ukraine. Ukraine's much anticipated counteroffensive against Russia appears to be getting underway, and we've seen the destruction of the Novokarkovka dam today, with water gushing through, leaving dozens of settlements in southern Ukraine at risk of flooding. Both sides blame the other for that.
Now, looking ahead to Thursday, countries around the globe will be marking World Ocean Day.
Yes, that's right. It's an event that happens each year on June the 8th and aims to raise awareness of the challenges faced by the planet's oceans and seas. It's been marked in this way since 2002, and since 2008, it's also been recognised by the UN. The organisers say tens of thousands of activities, celebrations and other events are expected, including those hosted by schools, universities, aquariums and marinas. They hope to engage millions of people in more than 150 countries. They argue that no matter where we live, everyone depends on a healthy ocean to survive and thrive, and that safeguarding the ocean will help secure a stable climate into the future. One of the key aims of the day is to seek commitments from countries around the world to protect 30% of lands, waters and ocean by the year 2030. And the hope is that if that happens, it would help combat climate change and protect marine biodiversity.
So what are the key ways that oceans are under threat at the moment, Jonathan?
Well, one significant issue is that oceans are reaching record temperatures. Seas are now warmer than any other time in recorded human history, and that increase in temperature has been directly linked to global warming. Rising sea temperatures have a massive effect on the creatures living in them, causing lots of them to struggle to adapt. We've seen bleaching of coral reefs around the world and significant problems for fish and other marine life. There's also the big issue of plastic waste in oceans. The Worldwide Fund for Nature says plastic pollution is causing an environmental disaster, and over three quarters of all plastic ever produced is already waste. Plastic pollution kills wildlife, damages natural ecosystems and contributes to climate change. And of course, the problem with plastic is that most of it isn't biodegradable, meaning it can hang around in the environment and take hundreds of years to break down. More than 8 million tons of plastic enters the world's oceans each year, and most of that escapes from land. It's thought that more than 5 trillion pieces of plastic are currently in oceans around the world, and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. There's even that so-called Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is a collection of waste floating in the Pacific, roughly halfway between the coasts of California and Hawaii.
There's quite a bit of activity this week in the American presidential race. On the Republican side, the former Vice President Mike Pence is declaring his candidacy.
Yes, that's right. There's at least two big announcements of a run towards the Republican nomination and primaries in next year's U.S. presidential election. First up, later today, we're expecting to see the declaration of Chris Christie. He's a former governor of New Jersey who also advised the Trump campaign in 2016. Although he subsequently became a vocal critic of the former president, he enters the race as something of an underdog, 6 years on from his 2016 presidential campaign, failing to get traction amid a crowded field that included Donald Trump. And then Donald Trump's vice president, Mike Pence, is expected to head to Iowa on Wednesday to announce his candidacy. Iowa is one of the early states to carry out the primary process that selects presidential candidates, although it uses something called a caucus. We had confirmation yesterday that Mike Pence had filed the relevant paperwork for a run. He incurred President Trump's wrath by refusing to support his effort to overturn the results of the 2020 election. He's a staunch social conservative who stood by Donald Trump throughout his time in office, but has increasingly distanced himself from the former Republican president since their election defeat. He said Mr. Trump's encouragement of the rioters who attacked the U.S. Capitol on January the 6th, 2021, put him and his family in danger. But both Chris Christie and Mike Pence are seen as something of a long shot to secure the nomination. Mr. Christie is polling at around 1% in the Real Clear Politics poll of polls, which tracks preferences for the nomination process, and Mr. Pence is currently just shy of 4% support for the Republican nomination.
There's some big names standing on the Republican side as well. I've mentioned a few. Nikki Haley is another one. Who else?
Yes. Well, the two front runners are clearly former President Donald Trump and Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis. At the moment, Donald Trump's polling at around 53% support, and Ron DeSantis is on around 22%, giving Mr. Trump a lead of around 31 percentage points. Mr. DeSantis had been polling much more strongly than that, but a series of missteps have seen him lose support. His formal launch 2 weeks ago, which took the form of an interview with Elon Musk on Twitter, was overshadowed by technical difficulties for the social network getting the live stream of that conversation to work properly. And as you say, Nikki Haley's also in the running. She's the former governor of South Carolina, who went on to be Donald Trump's ambassador to the United Nations in 2017 and 2018. She's polling at a little over 4% on average at the moment. But with more than 10 declared or almost declared candidates, the growing Republican field concerns many Trump opponents inside the Republican Party. They fear a large number of challengers will splinter the anti-Trump vote and hand the party's nomination to the former president, who can rely on at least around a third of the Republican base to back him.
And later in the week, Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak visiting Washington for a meeting with President Biden. So what can we expect there?
Well, yes, that's right. He'll be in Washington Wednesday and Thursday for meetings with Joe Biden, members of Congress and U.S. business leaders, according to Mr. Sunak's spokesperson. On the agenda will be improving economic ties and how to sustain military support for Ukraine in its conflict with Russia. It's Rishi Sunak's first visit to Washington since he was appointed prime minister in October, and he's seeking to improve relations with the U.S. after they were strained by the U.K.'s departure from the European Union. One of the particular challenges has been the situation in Northern Ireland, which has been without a government for some time because the Assembly in Stormont has stalled over the so-called Northern Ireland Protocol, which is the part of the Brexit deal that pertains to the challenge of maintaining free trade with Northern Ireland, which remains part of the UK, whilst also keeping an open border on the Irish mainland between Northern Ireland and Ireland, which is, of course, part of the European Union. Back in April, the so-called Windsor Framework was adopted between the UK and European Union, which significantly reduces the need for Irish sea border checks on goods destined for Northern Ireland only and removes bans on certain products like chilled sausages from entering Northern Ireland from Great Britain. Now, the Windsor framework led to a thawing in relations between the UK and the US because President Biden had taken a keen interest in the matter, not least because of his Irish ancestry. Mr. Biden described the Windsor framework as an essential step towards protecting peace as he heaped praise on the EU and UK government for securing that revised deal.
And the UK has been hoping to secure a free trade deal with the United States. So is there likely to be any progress towards that goal?
That looks pretty unlikely. Rishi Sunak has said there will not be talks about a free trade agreement on this visit. It's an issue that played a significant role in the Brexit campaign, as those in favour of Brexit argued the prospect of a US-UK trade deal was a key benefit of leaving the EU. But President Obama intervened during that campaign back in 2016, arguing the US would be more likely to try and seek a deal with a large bloc such as the EU than with an individual nation like the UK. He said that Brexit would leave the UK at, quote, the back of the queue for a trade deal with the US. Then, when Donald Trump came into office in the States, he frequently touted what he called a, quote, very substantial trade deal with the UK. That did not come to pass, however, though there were moves towards the end of his presidency to do a mini deal. But those also failed. And since President Biden's inauguration, he's played down the chances of an imminent UK-US trade deal.
Jonathan, always great to catch up on a Tuesday. The BBC's Jonathan Frewen. joining us. The latest news from around the world through the eyes of the BBC.